A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 97. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television. And today we are talking about Alternative 3. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, Alternative 3, where we find ourselves asking if we can tell science from science fiction. And it's a slightly unusual show for us to discuss, Brian.
Yes, it certainly is, and gets into the blend from what's a documentary and what isn't and so on. It was one 50-minute show that broadcast on ITV in June 1977, and it inspired and provoked quite a reaction when it was broadcast and some considerable controversy there.
And that controversy carried on over the years because it's left a very strange legacy with us, Brian, which we'll talk about more when we get to our second episode about this unusual show.
Absolutely. But first, let's get into a bit of a description of this show and what they did and how they did it. So as we said, it's quite an unusual topic for us here at British Invaders. I think it's an unusual topic in any setting. In 1977, an Anglia television show called Science Report was airing its final episode.
And they were setting up for their final episode with an investigation into the phenomenon called the brain drain, which was, as I remember, a very popular news story in the 60s and 70s in Britain with Britain losing its top scientists to better paying conditions abroad, particularly in America, but also in Australia and so on. So that's how the science team report started out, with this investigation into the brain drain. But what they found, rather mysteriously, was that they had cases of 21 people who, instead of moving abroad, had apparently just vanished. So quite a bit of mystery to start this show going, Brian.
Yes, you're watching the science documentary and they're talking about these scientists and expert people of various types who, instead of disappearing to some other part of the world to work, they went to Heathrow Airport and then disappeared. No one knew what happened to them after that.
So we have this episode of Science Report called Alternative 3, and it was hosted by Tim Brinton, who at the time was very well known on British television because he had been a newsreader. He was also a television presenter, and later on after this show, he would actually go on to be a Member of Parliament. So quite a wide-ranging career. But he brings a certain authority to this show, and with his familiarity and his sort of, like, you know, we're used to him telling us the news and how things are.
I think he was actually the regular presenter for Science Report at that time as well.
Right. Okay. So he was the regular presenter. So, you know, certainly added to the sort of like the authority of this show. And then he's joined by two investigative reporters, Colin Benson and Catherine White, who follow the story, and we get to sort of follow their actions, but we also get bits where they're talking directly to the camera and telling us what they've discovered. And this is how the story starts to move along.
Yes, and they're talking about these things with people disappearing and so on. And then all of a sudden it jumps to talking about a British scientist, Sir William Ballantyne, who had died mysteriously in a car crash. And there were some strange things surrounding this that, you know, why would there be an accident in this place? It didn't seem to make much sense. And there may have been some strange things happening around then. And this scientist was known for his work on analyzing signals from space at the Jodrell Bank Observatory, the radio telescope installation. And he left behind a reel of videotape, which appears to have a meaningless signal on it, just background noise coming from space and nothing else. But this seemed to be very important to him for some reason.
And it's another little clue in the mystery that the Science Report team seemed to be uncovering. So what started with this brain drain investigation has now gone into rather stranger sort of areas of missing people, a strange car crash, this unusual videotape, which may be a clue. And then a couple more people sort of come into the mix. The first one is a young American man who actually contacts the science report team. And we see one of the important reporters, Colin Benson, setting up a meeting with him. And he's a rather strange young man, isn't he, Brian? Because at first he's all business, but on their second meeting, he appears to be rather paranoid and on the run from somebody or someone. And he suggests that there may be a link between the mysteries that the science report team are looking at and NASA, of all things.
Yes, which is very strange. And he is, at first, a character that seems, you know, very much legitimate and very serious. And then when we see him again, we're not sure, is this guy a reliable source of information or not? It just seems kind of strange.
Yes, because the second time, as you say, he's very strange, isn't he? He seems to be convinced that somebody's after him, and he refuses to talk anymore, when he'd first agreed to tell the team more about what was going on. And then we jump in the team's investigations to Cambridge, where Tim Brinton meets an expert on climate science, Professor Carl Gerstein. And the two of them are discussing recent changes on Earth in terms of climate. In particular, you know, this came in 1977 after one of the hottest summers on record in Britain, at least, and certainly around the world, I think, in 1976, when there'd been a considerable drought. So they are discussing this, and it seems to have some bearing on the investigation.
Yes, that's right. And Gerstein starts talking about this conference that took place in 1957 that was talking about the environment and the population of the Earth possibly going to outstrip the resources available on the Earth. And they talk a little bit about things like the greenhouse effect, which was a very sort of new thing at that time. And Gerstein describes that in 57, when they were talking about Earth outstripping its resources, that they talked about three alternatives that could be solutions. One was to somehow reduce the population. The second was to somehow make the Earth become habitable again, to reverse the process of environmental deterioration.
But Gerstein tells us, and tells Tim Brinton, that both these alternatives were thought to be unworkable, which obviously leaves us with the question, which gives us the title of this show, what was alternative three? And at this point in the show, Tim Brinton actually asks that question to Carl Gerstein, who walks off camera and refuses to answer it. So the mystery just deepens, Brian.
Yes, you get this idea that, well, maybe alternative three isn't so crazy after all, but we don't know what alternative three is. The show has a commercial break in the middle and comes back for the second half. And in the second half of the show, we are focusing more on NASA and also on the Soviet space program and on U.S.-Soviet relations. So again, this science documentary takes a big jump to a different area of topics.
Absolutely. It's covering all sorts of ground, jumping around from missing scientists to climate change, and then jumping to NASA and relations between the Americans and the Russians. And we get another character who the team track down, who's a former NASA astronaut called Bob Grodin. But their discussions and their sort of interviews with him just seem to raise, if anything, more questions than we're getting answers at this stage in this show. Just adds more to the mystery, Brian.
Yes, Grodin, who was this astronaut, is apparently sort of down on his luck and not in such great shape at this point. And we're not so sure if what he's saying, if those things are reliable. And we get these questions, well, what is NASA doing in space now? And what have the Soviets been doing in space? You know, we haven't heard much, since the U.S. got to the moon first. Well, what did they do then? And what has NASA been doing lately? You know, there are all these questions here. And you also get some experts on U.S.-Soviet relations saying that there is no reason that they can see that all-out war between the U.S. and the Soviets has not broken out. You know, there has to be something going on that we don't know about that has kept things in this relatively peaceful state that we had.
And it's fascinating. I mean, as you say, they pull in all these other experts to tell us about bits about space exploration and bits about relationships at sort of like the top levels of diplomacy. And we keep getting these little hints of mysteries, some of them coming from Bob Grodin. We even get hints about something going on the dark side of the moon. And then, most mysteriously at all, something to do with Mars. And that there's hints that something might be happening there as well. And what seemed like a very simple investigation has suddenly hit all sorts of areas, Brian, and all sorts of mystery and intrigue.
Yes, it slowly builds up into something that is very intriguing and bringing in all these threads that seem to be not quite connecting, but it looks like they could connect, but you just don't know how. So it's quite an intriguing little piece as it builds up.
It's all very strange, and I'm not sure there's any other podcast discussing this program at all, Brian.
Gerstein's theories, when he first put them forward over 20 years ago, had been almost universally dismissed. He was called an alarmist and a pessimist. Events proved him, on the contrary, to be something of an optimist. By the late 60s, the Earth was already so trapped within an envelope of its own pollution that heat from the sun and the Earth's industrial processes was having increasing difficulty in escaping. 10 years earlier than Gerstein's prediction, the notorious greenhouse effect, a thickening.
Yes, it's a very unusual production, Alternative 3. So speaking of production, we should get into our production notes here. Alternative 3 was originally intended to be broadcast on April 1st, 1977. It was the last episode of Science Report, which was a science documentary series that was apparently not going to be recommissioned, and it looks like they knew that at the time. So this was what they were looking at to do for their last episode. And it was conceived and written by David Ambrose.
And as the truth dawns upon us all, David Ambrose had been approached by Anglia Television to write a television play. And he had an idea about doing something with the subject of disappearing people, but he could not work out where the people were disappearing to. And that was the sort of stage he'd reached in developing this project.
And he started working with Christopher Miles, and they came up with an idea. Well, maybe they had an idea where these people could be disappearing to. And then they got to thinking and thought, well, maybe this could be a hoax documentary. And this is what we've been leading up to, of course, is this was part of a documentary series. It was set for April Fool's Day, and this was a hoax documentary.
And yes, all the characters that we see on screen were played by actors, with the exception of Tim Brinton himself as the presenter. But the journalists and the experts and the various people they tracked down were all played by actors. And it was, because it was officially classified as a drama, they could only use unionized actors. But I think they had the advantage that somehow Tim Brinton must have been a member of Equity, Brian, I think.
Yes, he was actually, because he was an actor at the time as well. I don't know that he did very much acting, but yes, he was classified as both an actor and a presenter. A little unusual in that way.
Yes, he had a wide-ranging career, as we've said.
The production team used a lot of stock footage for the various things, but especially for the space-related things in the second half. And the way that they used that stock footage was very much in the style that a science documentary would be using bits of footage and including them. So it very much added to the documentary feel that they were including these bits of footage. It also actually had the score by Brian Eno, of all people, which was quite spooky and atmospheric, and that added a very nice sort of spooky feel to it that still kept it within that documentary style that worked quite well.
Yes, I noticed the music more as the show went along and as the air of sort of suspense and intrigue builds, and Brian Eno's music just complements that quite well, really, isn't it, Brian?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the, as you say, they've used all this science footage, which looks very, you know, typically science documentary, lots of shots from the Apollo missions and so on. And then they've also done other little tricks. They've taken footage that they've done of various interviews that they've staged, obviously, and then they ask the production team to degrade the film to make it look more scratchy and realistic, which I gather the actual, you know, the film production people were quite puzzled by why they wanted to make the film look worse than it was. But they wanted to get this sort of gloomy, sort of naturalistic look to some of the interviews, I think.
Yes, when they sent their films in to be developed, and, you know, they had these, you know, 16mm films that they wanted to look like, you know, 8mm film that had been beat up and shot in far less than ideal conditions. And it took some real convincing to get the film developers to make it look not so good.
Yeah, but it does, you know, it adds to the sort of feel of this show. And then also we've got the actors who apparently a lot of them didn't rehearse. They deliberately didn't rehearse their lines so that they would appear more sort of naturalistic, so that they would trip over some lines slightly and sound like they were saying them for the first time, which they were.
Yes, I think the actor who was playing Gerstein, the scientist, I think he especially did that sort of thing.
Yes. And then at the end of the show, we get the very first credit up on screen as the show ends, was the date of the production, which, as you said, Brian, was the 1st of April 1977, which is where it really starts to give itself away, obviously.
Yes, that was deliberately there as a giveaway. And then as it shows the credits, it actually started with, you know, producer, director, and so on. But it did, if you stayed watching the credits, it showed the list of actors. So it showed that all of these supposed scientists, astronauts, and what have you that we've been interviewing are actually actors. And it showed credits for about 15 different actors there.
So we've got it supposed to go out on the 1st of April 1977 as the last episode ever of Science Report. In fact, it unfortunately got delayed by some scheduling problems, and as often happens in 60s and 70s British television, there was some industrial action going on. So it wasn't actually broadcast until June 1977, which might have sort of, I don't know, played down the hoax or dampened the surprise maybe, or maybe made make more people believe it, I suppose.
I think it probably did make more people believe it and made some people think it was rather strange that they were getting this April Fool's joke in June.
At the time that interview was filmed, Carl Gerstein refused to say anything further about Alternative 3.
In the second part of this special program, we shall show you how we uncovered that information for ourselves. We'll also be bringing you a remarkable interview with former astronaut Bob Grodin, filmed in secret at his hideaway in New England. Stay with us then.
So, I think that covers it for the first half of our discussion on Alternative 3. Next time, we will discuss exactly what Alternative 3 was, and we will talk about a little bit about the shock ending at the end of it, too. We won't entirely give that away, but we will talk about it a bit.
And we'll also talk about the remarkable response to this show and why some people still to this day believe it to have been real.
And we will do some of our own reviews and recommendations, of course, and talk about the availability and how you can get a hold of this.
And as well as that, as you can tell, we've been dancing around the spoilers slightly, but it is difficult to discuss Alternative 3 without getting into spoilers. So the part two of our discussion will have much more to say about Alternative 3 itself. So our advice is, Brian, if you can watch it before our next episode, now might be a good time to do so, eh?
Yes, you have a couple weeks to get a hold of this and watch it, and that might be a good idea. We won't be giving everything away next episode, but we will be giving a little more away. And this is quite a neat show to watch if you aren't completely spoiled. So it would be a pretty good idea to watch this between now and then if you can.
Hopefully we've intrigued you enough to go and find it before we come back next time.
I hope so. It certainly is an intriguing show. So you can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England, signing off as well.